You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. An alleged sinister hacking plot by China. CISA and the FBI issue a secure by design alert. Ransomware hits municipalities in Florida and Texas. The EU sets regulations to safeguard the upcoming European Parliament elections. Reversing Labs describe a suspicious NuGet package. Senator Bill Cassidy questions a costly breach at HHS. A data center landlord sues over requests to reveal its customers. On our Industry Voices segment, Jason Kitka, CISO and Senior Vice President of Product at Automox, discusses ways to increase IT efficiency while avoiding tool overload and complexity. And Google's AI throws users a malicious bone. It's Tuesday, March 26, 2024. I'm Dave Bittner, and this is your CyberWire Intel Briefing. The Justice Department and FBI revealed what they've labeled a sinister hacking plot by China, charging seven Chinese nationals for a cyber attack campaign spanning 14 years. Targeting U.S. officials, critics of China, businesses, and politicians globally. Accused of sending over 10,000 malicious emails affecting thousands, this operation, backed by China's government, aimed at undermining U.S. cybersecurity and appropriating American innovations. The U.S. State Department is offering a $10 million reward for information on the accused, emphasizing the U.S.'s determination to combat cyber espionage. This follows similar accusations from the U.K. and New Zealand against China for targeting electoral systems and parliament. China, denying the allegations, criticized them as baseless and slanderous. The hacking involves sophisticated methods, including compromising emails and electronic devices to acquire sensitive information from government officials, foreign dissidents, and industries crucial to U.S. defense and technology. CISA and the FBI issued a secure by design alert, urging organizations to check for and eliminate SQL injection vulnerabilities in their software. Despite being well documented with known mitigations, SQLi remains a common security flaw, risking customer data, as seen in the cyber attack on Progress Software's MoveIt transfer. Authorities advise technology manufacturers to review their code for SQLi vulnerabilities and start immediate mitigations to remove such defects from all software products. A secure-by-design approach, starting from the design phase through the development and updates, can prevent SQLi by separating SQL code from user-supplied data using parameterized queries. This strategy reduces cybersecurity burdens on customers and minimizes public risk, promoting proactive security practices over reactive measures. Meanwhile, CISA has updated its known exploited vulnerabilities catalog to include critical vulnerabilities affecting Fortinet FortiClient EMS, Avante EPM CSA, and NICE Linear eMERGE E3 series, drawing particular attention to a significant SQL injection flaw in Fortinet software that permits unauthorized code execution through specially crafted requests. This issue, actively exploited in the wild, was highlighted after security researchers released a proof-of-concept exploit. The exploit demonstrates potential for remote code execution utilizing SQL Server functionalities. Fortinet, having initially reported no known wild exploitation, updated their advisory to confirm the active exploitation. CISA has set a compliance deadline of April 15th for federal agencies to remediate these vulnerabilities and recommends private organizations do the same to protect their networks. St. Cloud, Florida has become the latest city to report a cyber attack, joining Pensacola and Jacksonville Beach in facing similar incidents. The ransomware attack disrupted various city services, forcing some to operate in cash-only modes, though essential services like police, fire rescue, and trash collection continue as normal. The attack did not affect the Osceola County Tax Collector's Office or external utilities. With no group claiming responsibility and state officials yet to comment, the attack reflects the growing trend of ransomware incidents targeting state and local governments. In 2023, 256 attacks were reported, up from 196 the previous year. Florida, having experienced numerous attacks across different sectors, has a law prohibiting government entities from paying ransom demands and mandates rapid incident reporting. The Tarrant County Appraisal District in Texas is dealing with a ransomware attack, with hackers demanding $700,000. Following the March 21st attack, the district held an emergency meeting to address the ransom demand and explore data recovery options. The suspected group behind this is Medusa. The district is considering the impact on personal taxpayer information and has initiated steps to bolster security, including purchasing Office 365 and SentinelOne software and hiring a cyber consultant. Residents expressed their concerns about the district's preparedness and transparency. The district has yet to decide on paying the ransom. Staying with ransomware, a Sophos-commissioned survey of nearly 3,000 IT professionals reveals significant insights on ransomware attacks, particularly the compromise of backups. In attacks where backups were compromised, organizations were nearly twice as likely to pay the ransom, facing recovery costs 8 times higher than those with intact backups. 94% of affected organizations reported attempts to compromise their backups, with a success rate of 57% across industries. The energy and education sectors experienced the highest rates of successful backup compromise, while IT and retail were more resilient. Compromised backups led to higher encryption rates, doubled ransom demands, and nearly doubled the rate of ransom payments compared to unaffected backups. The European Commission has introduced new regulations under the Digital Services Act for major tech platforms, targeting those with over 45 million users in the EU to safeguard the upcoming European Parliament elections in June against misinformation and interference. These rules mandate the setup of internal teams to monitor interference risks and require a publicly accessible repository of political ads for enhanced transparency. The initiative responds to concerns over potential Russian meddling and the rise of far-right nationalism. Platforms are also urged to promote official electoral information and adapt their systems to counteract content that compromises electoral integrity, including the use of generative AI to create fake content. Violations could result in fines up to 6% of a company's global turnover. Researchers at Reversing Labs discovered a suspicious NuGet package, Squeezer Framework 480, potentially aimed at developers using technology from the China-based Boson Precision Industry Technology Company Limited. The package, flagged for behaviors associated with malicious files, raised concerns about a possible malicious software supply chain campaign targeting industrial espionage. The Squeezer Framework 480.dll, responsible for various functions including GUI management and robot movement settings, exhibited alarming behaviors like screenshot taking, ping packet sending, and data transmission over open sockets. Despite the lack of definitive evidence linking the package to a broader espionage group, its potential for data exfiltration and continuous operation hints at malicious intent. The discovery underscores the growing risk of supply chain threats in open source repositories, urging developers to exercise caution and apply rigorous scrutiny to third-party code. Senator Bill Cassidy is questioning a breach at the Department of Health and Human Services where $7.5 million was fraudulently stolen through a grant payment platform between March and November of 2023. Hackers compromised email accounts of about five grantees, redirecting funds to their own bank accounts. Cassidy's concern emphasizes the impact on at-risk populations and healthcare facilities, accusing HHS of failing to notify Congress, thereby undermining public trust and highlighting government unpreparedness against cyber threats. HHS, however, describes the incident as a targeted fraud campaign, not a cyber attack, and claims to have been in contact with Congress, assuring efforts to fully compensate affected grantees. The issue raises broader concerns about cybersecurity and healthcare, evidenced by recent legislation and inquiries following a ransomware attack on United Health Group. Our Mind Your Own Business desk reports that CoreSight LLC, a Denver-based data center company, has sued Fairfax County, Virginia, for overstepping its authority by demanding tenant information for tax assessment purposes. The suit, filed on March 8th in Fairfax County Circuit Court, challenges the county's requests for tenant contact details from CoreSight's four data centers and one office in Reston, Virginia, where it serves approximately 300 customers. CoreSight argues such demands are arbitrary and exceed legal boundaries, asserting that tax disputes should be directly between the county and the tenants, not involving the landlord. The company seeks judicial relief from compliance and protection against penalties while the case is ongoing. The county's stance, supported by Virginia law, aims at assessing tax liabilities based on the valuable computer equipment housed in data centers. But CoreSight contends disclosing tenant information could breach customer confidentiality and impose undue burdens. Coming up after the break, on our Industry Voices segment, Jason Kitka, CISO and Senior Vice President of Product at Automox, discusses ways to increase IT efficiency while avoiding tool overload and complexity. Stay with us. Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. The IT world used to be simpler. You only had to secure and manage environments that you controlled. Then came new technologies and new ways to work. Now, employees, apps, and networks are everywhere. This means poor visibility, security gaps, and added risk. That's why Cloudflare created the first-ever connectivity cloud. Visit cloudflare.com to protect your business everywhere you do business. In today's sponsored Industry Voices segment, my conversation with Jason Kikta, CISO and Senior Vice President of Product at Automox. We're discussing ways to increase IT efficiency, all while avoiding tool overload and complexity.
So I think we've reached a bit of an inflection point in the industry because, I started in IT back in the 90s when the buzzword was adoption, right? And everyone was focused on adoption and moving people, literally moving people off of typewriters and other, extremely manual systems, non-networked computers into things that were networked and then eventually on the internet. And so, that was a big push. And then, the industry kind of shifted once we hit the 2000s into things like, reducing the amount of touch labor where you would literally walk around and do things on a system. And we wanted to have virtual touch labor instead because it was much faster if you didn't have to walk between offices. And coupled with that, we saw this big push for IT efficiency, right? We needed to deliver those IT services, but we needed to balance it with cost savings, and that was efficiency because, IT had simply grown too much as a cost center for what the industry was willing to bear. And now we've entered this new phase in the last several years where there's this big focus on automation. And I think that's just, it's in some respects, it's just the latest phase of IT efficiency. But in other respects, it's a bit of a paradigm shift. And we see it in everything from simple scripting to the adoption of AI, of thinking about that optimization and how do we have computers do the things that they are really good at, things at, scale, repetition, precision, and have humans do what we are best at, which is experience, intuition, judgment, and finding that right balance is a challenge for a lot of teams. And I think that's where a lot of current thought and focus is being placed.
Can you share some insights as to kind of the contrast between the aspirational promise of automation versus the reality of what a team faces when they go to implement it?
When people think about automation, what so many of us picture in our heads initially is that, just the challenge of getting it automated. How am I going to automate this? How do I account for those edge cases? How do I make sure that it's reliable? And, much like a doctor, the first rule is do no harm. There's a lot of people who, I would say, to a degree, over-focus on that initial concern. And it is something that you have to deal with and overcome. But where you really hit the pinnacle of skill with automation is, and I like to liken this to a security concept because I'm also a security person and my mind goes there. In security, there's a lot of focus on IOCs. And so everyone wants to think that detection is about having the most IOCs and the best IOCs. And if I would just have, just a few more IOCs and a thing that detects it at the right spot, that's how I'll really find that badness. And anyone who's ever been a detection engineer or even done incident response will tell you that's not where the real skill set is. The real skill set is in tuning it. And it's much the same way in automation of, it's not so much getting the initial automations set up. That can be a little daunting, but there are so many good tools out there today to make it simple and so many playbooks, pre-built things. We have our own catalog that we've spent years building that make it straightforward. But then the real skill is in tuning and adjusting. How do you optimize? And optimizing is I think where, you know, a lot of people can struggle because they don't know what metrics to look at to base that optimization on. You know, what are you trying to adjust? And also, you know, businesses change over time. Your organizational demands change over time. And so something that may have worked for you 6 months, a year ago, 3 years ago, might not be effective today. And so you have to be able to, you know, identify those changing needs and be able to shift your automation to match it.
How do you recommend that folks build in that kind of feedback loop so that they can check in regularly to make sure that, you know, what is being delivered to them is appropriate?
I like to do basically a three-part strategy to accomplish this. I think the first one is you know, just like you're automating IT tasks, you know, you should automate some of your reporting around that. You know, have some automation to gather the necessary data points, display them for you, automated reports, you know, work with your security team, because a lot of times they also have the tooling that you want to be able to correlate events and that sort of thing, so that there are things even outside of your IT tools that you can use to really enhance your automated reporting. The second part is, you know, the sort of spot checking, right? You know, we used to have an old saying back in the old days when I was still on active duty in the Marine Corps. We had this saying called expect what you inspect. And so if you're not inspecting it from time to time, then you shouldn't expect it to be working or be in the state that you want it to be. And so some periodic spot checking and going around and looking and doing some of that human-based correlation, you know, is also necessary on top of whatever you may have automated. And then the third piece is that sort of, you know, that walk around aspect of get out and talk to folks in your company, whether you're, even if you're fully remote, right? Get out virtually, go take a stroll around some Slack channels or set up some meetings with people that you don't normally encounter and ask them how it's working for them. You know, what is their quality of service like? Are they having a good user experience? Does the machine perform the way that they expect it to? Do, you know, are trouble tickets getting answered in a timely fashion? You know, there's no substitute for that sort of, you know, human interaction, because even the challenge being that you might perceive through your automated means, the first two that I discussed, you know, that sort of automated collection, that something is working very well, but the user may perceive it in an entirely different way. And they're the ones who really matter, because they're the ones who have their job to do and their own productivity to provide to the business. And so you need to get that them in your feedback loop as well to make sure that you're really hitting the mark.
You know, we've seen a lot of reporting and also just anecdotally that there's a lot of what I would categorize as overload. You know, people, they're trying to use these tools. There's so many tools that they feel overloaded with information. They're struggling and grappling with the complexity of these tools. Is this an area where, you know, smartly applied, that automation can help, you know, lift a little of that burden as well?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, there also needs to be consideration of, you know, you need to think about your tech stack holistically. You know, I have a lot of things in my tech stack. Pretty much all of them have some ability to automate things. And, you know, if the automation is self-contained within that application or that bit of technology, okay, fine, I'll use that. But if it's going to be cross technologies, if it's doing a little bit more of that synchronization, that orchestration bit across multiple things, then I want to think very carefully about, you know, what product is best suited to do that, and where am I going to place it, and is that a stable part of my tech stack? And so I have a lot of automation in my network, and we build a lot of it around Automox, around Rapid7, around Okta, those things in our network that are going to be there a long time, that already have the necessity and the ability to touch a lot of systems and are designed to interoperate with other things. And they're sort of the natural place to land those automations. So, you know, thinking through where you want that automation to live is almost as important as building the automation itself.
Our thanks to Jason Kitka from Automox for joining us.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And finally, Google's recently launched Search Generative Experience, or SGE, feature, designed to provide users with text summaries and site recommendations for complex queries, has come under scrutiny for inadvertently recommending malicious websites. SEO consultant Lily Ray highlighted instances where she was searching for pit bull puppies on Craigslist, but SGE suggested sites involved in scams, malware, and fake giveaways. These dubious sites, often sharing the same .online domain and HTML templates, appear to be part of an SEO poisoning campaign. Users clicking on these links were led through redirects to scam sites, encountering fake captchas, spam ads, and affiliate scams. Google has since removed the questionable SGE results and emphasizes its ongoing efforts to refine its systems and algorithms to combat spam. This incident follows another recent controversy where Google paused its Gemini AI image generation feature due to concerns over producing historically inaccurate and offensive images. Seems Google's AI was like, forget the pit bull puppy, here's a Trojan horse instead. Yes, those results were positively unforgivable. And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. We'd love to know what you think of this podcast. You can email us at cyberwire@n2k.com. N2K Strategic Workforce Intelligence optimizes the value of your biggest investment, your people. We make you smarter about your team while making your team smarter. Learn more at n2k.com. This episode was produced by Liz Stokes. Our mixer is Trey Hester, with original music by Elliot Peltzman. Our executive producers are Jennifer Iben and Brandon Karp. Our executive editor is Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.